Welcome to the Trial Lawyer View podcast. In today's episode, I delve into the area of law firm FP&A with John Scott. John Scott, a seasoned partner at Ander CPAs Advisors, specializing in virtual CFO services for law firms. With a wealth of experience in tax planning, financial consulting, and estate planning, John brings a unique perspective on navigating the intricate financial landscapes of legal practices. As a dedicated accredited estate planner and chartered global management accountant, John not only advises on individual and corporate tax strategies, but also spearheads Ander's CPAs Advisors' efforts in serving the legal industry. His insights have been crucial in helping law firms optimize profitability, manage cash flow effectively, and achieve tax efficiency through proactive financial accounting practices. Today, we'll tap into John's insights and expertise in navigating the financial landscape of operating a personal injury law firm. John, welcome to Trial Lawyer View. Thank you for taking the time to be here with me today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.
As a virtual CFO specializing in working with law firms, what are the common pitfalls you've observed in financial management? How do you guide your clients to mitigate those kinds of challenges?
You know, the biggest pitfall I see is staying in sync with the cash flow curve. In other words, defining the working capital needs of the firm and then having the discipline to leave that cash within the firm. And if you think about it, PI firms are more risky than hourly billing firms. And so their need for working capital cash is bigger. And so if we can define what that working capital target is and get them to have the discipline to keep it on hand, then that next settlement that comes in is available for distribution to the partner. So that's the one thing that I wish I could impart on PI attorneys is don't strip out cash at year end and then rely on bank debt going forward. And then if I can do that and build a cash reserve, the second thing that I would like to see clients do, PI firms, is self-finance their cases. Because, you know, for 40 years, we had very low interest rates and bank debt for financing of cases was not a big cost. But today, those costs are skyrocketing and firms that rely on lines of credit, it's just eating them alive to pay this interest. So why not be the bank yourself and self-finance those cases? And then I think the other thing is know what you're good at and keep an eye on capacity. In other words, if I have 20% capacity in the firm, but I only take half the cases that come in, then I need a pipeline of cases that's double my capacity. Because I'm not going to accept every call that comes in as a new matter. And I might not be hired by the client. So knowing that capacity and knowing your financial position is key to keeping that flywheel of cases full and keeping all my people in, you know, fully engaged.
Some really great advice, because I've seen, you know, law firms have those kinds of challenges because, for one, maybe they're not as focused on the metrics, because you were just talking about capacity. I'm wondering, what are the top three or four metrics that a personal injury law firm can use to effectively manage revenue, ensure profitability amidst these fluctuating caseloads and settlements? Since, like you said, there's a bit of a roller coaster there with those types of practices.
Well, and the pandemic really exacerbated that roller coaster, right? The courts were shut down. Things just kind of ground to a halt. It's almost as if firms were starting out. If I'm a brand new PI firm and I just start to take on cases, I need to finance those cases until the end. It's either my cash or bank debt. And in some respects, we faced that with the pandemic. So I think knowing your cash flow targets and building to those and using your case management system to help you manage that cash position. Many people have a case management system, but they don't fully utilize it. They use it just to track cases and expenses. Many cash management systems will have a report, or you can easily customize a report to build an inventory of all your cases. You can define them by case type. You can define the milestones within those cases. And then on a regular cadence, weekly or monthly, the attorneys can go in and update those milestones. And then when we get close to when a court date is set, we know that we're either going to settle prior to that or go to court and have an adjudication of the matter. And somewhere around that court date, we're going to have an influx of cash from that matter. And so clients don't take cases that they typically don't think they will prevail on. And we know what the value of those cases are by case type. We can get pretty close to what those values are. So we can build this dynamic forecasting tool within our case management system to help us manage those cash flow. We can predict ebbs and flows in the cash flow and know when we either need to leave money behind or use the line of credit to overcome those dips in cash.
In terms of costs for a law firm and operating as efficiently as it possibly can, how would you suggest personal injury law firms identify areas where they can improve efficiency and reduce unnecessary operating costs? One example I think is a little self-serving, which is what we do, which is having personal injury law firms look at ways they can outsource. We do healthcare lien resolution, which is an administrative task that law firms take on, which really makes them inefficient and increases cost because it utilizes very costly paralegal and attorney time to do those tasks, which can be outsourced to a third party like us.
I love what you all do, and I think that's a great example of outsourcing. The ALA survey from a year ago said that 4 out of 5 firms outsource some non-legal function of their practice, whether it's payroll, accounting, what you all do. And in my mind, the world is built on specialization. If I can free up the attorneys and the paraprofessionals to do higher level legal work by doing the non-legal function, it helps them achieve better financial results. Would you rather have the best attorney in the firm negotiating the medical costs on a PI claim, or would you rather outsource that to an expert like yourself who can get better results at a lesser cost to the firm when you look at the all-in cost of them doing that same function? The same thing happens in the accounting world. Most attorneys did not go to law school or undergraduate school for accounting or finance. So when it comes to running the books and records of their firm, they're just not experts at that. They usually let someone, the longtime office manager, do it, and they have a full plate of other things to do. So we don't get current good financial information because it's not in their wheelhouse of the office manager, and it's not their first priority. And so one of the things I think is essential for PI firms and all law firms is to have good current financial information so that you can make data-based decisions rather than 3-month-old data, which is useless. Now, some of the other cost-cutting techniques are going to be contrary on the start to what you think, but if you spend the time to document and refine your workflow process from intake to adjudication by case type, it does 2 things. One, whenever I plug new people in, the documentation tells them exactly what they're supposed to do on that work step. And it creates these efficiencies. The other thing is, if I do this and I standardize those workflow processes, let's say I have 3 partners in the law firm, and they all have different ways of doing intake or investigation, that's a waste of time because the staff person has to think, okay, who am I working for in this case? But if I can standardize that process and have no deviations from how this firm does a specific task, then I'm going to create great efficiencies going forward. And even though it sounds like it's going to take time and effort up front to do that, it's going to lead to cost savings going forward. Another way is leverage. Push down. Once I have those tasks defined, if I can push those down to a paraprofessional or a younger, less experienced attorney, HR gets all over me for saying older or younger, so a less experienced attorney, then I'm doing a couple things. One, leverage is contrary because I have to take the time to train and review and trust. But when I do it, I'm creating my replacement and it's freeing me up to do higher level work. So pushing down work to the lowest level is going to create efficiencies going forward. And then I'd love to see PI firms run their profit and loss statement using classes. In other words, if I do motor vehicle accidents, hazardous waste exposure, and med mal, those are the three types of cases I do. I may not like doing motor vehicle accidents, but if I have the data, a P&L by class, I might find that MVAs are our most profitable class. And so I need to hire and devote more resources to that to maximize profit and cash flow. And then lastly, I want to hire the best available people. It's a tough environment to hire people right now. I think that tide is turning, but I want to hire the best people and I'm going to pay them well to incent them to do their best. And I want to invest in technology. So in other words, I'm going to spend money on the right things, good people and good technology, and that's going to lead to cost savings and more cash flow going forward.
And with the pandemic and changes that COVID brought about, because you were just talking about sort of more general, but I'm wondering, are there things that you are recommending to firms in terms of the way they operate to reduce operating costs? Because it seems like with as competitive as the landscape is, particularly in personal injury practices, that the more efficient you run, the more money that can go back into advertising for bringing in more cases or other things that are going to produce more revenue for the firm.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up advertising, because why do people advertise? Because it works. But we tend to cast seeds, you know, radio and TV, billboards, SEO, and we need to do the analysis to see what the return is on those efforts and then focus our future efforts on what's working and what's not. The other thing is the pandemic taught us that being in the office is not always necessary. Now, the folks in Florida and Wyoming, the natives, hate this concept because all the Californians went to Wyoming and bought land and drove up the prices. I was out there last September and we went fishing and the guide said, I will never be able to buy a house here because all the folks from California figured out during the pandemic, they don't have to be in California to do their job. And so I think firms can embrace this when you think you, before the pandemic, we thought, well, maybe we'll have to expand our footprint. We now realize that we have too much of a footprint and we can scale that back the next time the lease comes up. And allowing people to work remotely gives them a ton of flexibility. They also have some responsibility to perform. So we crammed about 5 years worth of remote work experience into a 2.5 year period. And we all figured out, and I was a non-believer that this would work, but we all figured out it did work and it can work going forward. And I think that flexibility is going to help lessen cost going forward. And it's got to drive down commercial real estate prices at some point.
Yeah, I definitely think that's already occurring. And well, you know, we've gone to a completely hybrid for our people that are here in our Orlando headquarters, and it has worked perfectly. And we were already 70% of the company was already working remote just by virtue of what we do and how we do it. So we were already kind of there when the pandemic hit. But now, you know, we've subleased part of our space because we just don't need it anymore. And, you know, when our lease is up, we'll probably take up less space than we do today because of that. And it's a good thing. It's operating leaner and more efficiently and allowing people to have a better work-life experience too, because, you know, here in Orlando, we have bad traffic. So that commute is not fun and, you know, makes people's lives more miserable and expensive, right? I mean, you know, there's expense associated with that for our team members. So I love the idea of, you know, if you can embrace it, and there's really no reason not to, people can do their work this way.
And for outsourcing vendors like you and us, it's easier for us to recruit talent because they don't have to be in Orlando coming into your office. They can be in any state in the United States. For law firms, there is some flexibility there. You could have your receptionist could be outsourced, or they don't have to necessarily be in your office. You can answer a phone anywhere, right? They can't necessarily hire an attorney that's not licensed in their state, but the attorneys have the flexibility to travel and still do work. You know, when they go to court, they're going to have to be here, but they just have so much more freedom than they had before when they were tied to an office.
Yeah, and I actually have a law practice that's separate and distinct from Synergy, and my law practice focuses on litigation in Florida here with Medicaid liens, and we used to have to go throughout the state to video conferencing centers, which is just the irony of that is just crazy. But anyway, once the pandemic hit, now everything with those hearings are via Zoom, with the judges sitting in Tallahassee instead of us going to specific locations. We just do that from our office. And I know, you know, a lot of the motion practice and whatnot has become that way. Trials, obviously, still you're there in the courtroom, but you know, everything else has become pretty much video dependent. So you really can do a heck of a lot sitting anywhere as long as you've got good internet access.
We all remember the video of the attorney who was an older gentleman and he had the cat filter on and he couldn't turn it off. Well, and the other thing is the video etiquette that we all learned. You know, some folks early on had their nose up, so you were looking, the camera was looking right at their nostrils and eye contact. I mean, these are all things that it would have taken us years to figure out that we crammed into a pandemic.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about cash flow management, because I know that's vital to the success of any law firm, especially those that are operating on a contingency fee basis. And you touched on it a little bit at the start, but I just want to make sure I get you to talk about what the three key factors that firms should consider when analyzing cash flow and how they can mitigate cash flow challenges given the practice.
Well, one of the questions I ask attorneys and PI attorneys is, do you know what your cash position is? And you would be shocked at how many people don't know what their cash position is. And it's because the accounting profession has been historical in nature for years. And the accounting profession is migrating to, and the firms that will thrive and survive are going to be forward-looking and advisory-based. And that's what your function inside or outsourced function needs to be, forward-looking. So it starts with reconciling your cash, not when the bank statement comes in, but rather on a weekly basis at a minimum, so that you always know that cash position. I can't emphasize enough that a good balance sheet and income statement, and by good, I mean everything is reconciled and tied out on a regular basis, so that at any one time, the owner could open up their accounting software and trust that the results are good, because only then can we then forecast cash. And we're going to forecast cash in a PI setting, building a report of the inventory of cases and knowing at what milestone within that the lifespan of that specific type of case that case is, so that we can predict when some influx of cash is coming in and predict how much that cash is going to be. And we like to build 12-week rolling forecast so that we know what our current cash position is and then what it will be for the next 3 months. And we think that gives them the comfort to know that they can pay their bills and not dip into debt or put money in. That's the worst way to inject cash. It's probably the most sensible way to put your own money in rather than borrow it from the bank. But when I go to an owner and say, hey, I need you, we're having a capital call because we need cash. Once I give the owner the money, it doesn't want to come back. So building on good financial information and forecasting effectively to know what the future is going to be. I liken it to when your grandfather took the family on vacation, this is how historical accountants used to be. The night before, he pulled out an atlas. It was 10-year-old atlas, and he made some notes. The next day, he piled everyone into the station wagon, and he took off. He could only react to what happened. If there was construction up there ahead that slowed things down, the 10-year-old atlas didn't know that, but he reacted to it, and he did a workaround. Maybe he was late to his destination. Today, we have Waze and Google Maps, and so we know from input from 1,000 different people that 2 miles ahead, there's a car stalled on the right and traffic is slowing, or there's an accident and it's shut down. But, oh, by the way, here's a workaround. When we pay attention to good financial information, we can anticipate those roadblocks and create our own workarounds to keep us on our path to achieving our journey and meeting or exceeding our goals. And then, so I think it comes down to good financial information and fully utilizing your case management system. I can't tell you how many times we've gotten to year end. At December 15th, we do an income tax projection for the firm. Here's going to be net income. We know actuals through the 15th, but what we don't know is what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks. And I just went to a firm last December and I said, okay, here's the net income we expect. Tell me what's coming in 2 weeks. I know what you're going to spend. I know what bonuses are. I don't know the revenue piece in the next 2 weeks. They said 600,000. It was $1.2 million. Now, that's a surprise on the good side, but we owed more taxes. We were prepared for it. The alternative would be the other way. Hey, we think 600,000 is coming in and it doesn't come in. The point is, if you build this report in your case management system, you're going to be a lot more accurate on that prediction over the last couple of weeks in the year.
So as we wrap up, I wanted to ask you something that's a little more open-ended, and hopefully we catch anything that we haven't talked about. I know traditionally FP&A is probably not the strongest function within personal injury law firms. Probably many don't have anyone specifically in the firm that's, you know, dedicated to looking at what's going on in finance, unlike most companies, like what we do. You know, we have a controller, we have an outsourced CFO, we have other team members that are part of our FP&A team. I'm curious, you know, what things are important for a personal injury law firm in terms of building out a strong FP&A program, because of all the things we've been talking about, which are so vitally important to understanding the performance of the law firm and understanding your position, where you are at any given point in the year. Are there things that you would recommend? Maybe it's, you know, making sure that they do have a virtual CFO like you, or having some type of, you know, basics program for FP&A within their firms.
You know, when they're small or just starting out, they either do it themselves or they task their office manager to run the accounting system. And that's okay when they're smaller, but as they start to grow in scale, the office manager had a full plate before they asked him or her to do this, and it wasn't in their skill set. So again, it goes back to, I don't have great information and it's historical. So there's nothing I can build on to predict the future. So as I grow and scale, I either need to hire talent. And remember, sometimes when you spend money, it creates efficiencies and more than pays for itself. Or I need to outsource it. I need to outsource the non-legal functions to the experts. And a lot of times, if you found the right controller, really great controller or CFO for your organization, there's a pretty hefty cost to that, plus the overhead burden. So the value proposition on outsourcing that function is it can be done about 2/3 the cost without the risk. In other words, a lot of times I'll hire who I think is the right person. My gut tells me they're going to be a good fit culturally and their knowledge base. But 18 months from now, I decide, oh, that wasn't good. I didn't get what I expected. If you outsource that, you can typically say, and you can determine within a couple of months, hey, this is the right solution. And if it's not, you just terminate the relationship. So there's less risk to outsourcing something. than staffing up internally. So I think that is the value proposition of outsourcing non-legal functions for a law firm.
I want to give you a sec, just talk a little bit about your practice and how people can get in touch with you if they have questions about anything we've talked about on today's podcast episode.
Sure, I appreciate that. I'm a tax partner at Anders, which is a Midwestern large firm. We're top 100 firm in the country. We have a division called Summit VCFO Services by Anders, and I lead the legal niche offering in the VCFO services. We bill on a subscription-based model. In other words, we price it out on an annual basis, but we get paid on a weekly basis. And we use an entire team to serve your finance function on a subscription basis. You can reach me at John C. Scott CPA on LinkedIn, or search Anders or Summit Virtual Services by Anders. I also have a book out called Judicial Dollars and Cents, which is, it's kind of a e-myth type book for running the finance function in a law firm. And in the show notes, we'll give you a QR code for a free copy of that book.
Yep, absolutely. We'll make sure we link to all of your social media as well as your contact information, and great offer for our listeners about the book. Thank you for doing that. And thank you, John, for joining me today on Trial Lawyer Review.
Thank you.